Hey folks, yes, I am back. Welcome to the Woofing Possum Podcast. I'm your host, Greg. And honestly, I didn't really know how to follow Hannah. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I'm still on cloud nine having such an amazing guest join us on the Woofing Possum Podcast. And I really hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did getting to actually chat with her. But for this episode, you're back to little old me. And I'm just going to be talking to you about a few observations during recent one-to-ones that I think have been really insightful for me personally as a professional, and I hope really insightful for you with your very own dogs. So let's crack on. So I thought I'd better start with a little bit of context on kind of why I wanted to talk about the next two dogs that I'm going to tell you a little bit about. And it's really because when you start out as a dog trainer, even when you're an experienced dog trainer, we always talk about effectively teaching and working with the dog that's in front of you, which means, you know, age-old, tried and tested methods might kind of have to be tweaked, might have to be modified, might even have to go out the window completely to help the dog and the partnership, obviously, between the dog and their kind of handler, kind of overcome their challenges and what it is that they're trying to achieve. So the first dog I'm going to tell you about is a wonderful little Jack Russell Terrier who's a little bit nervous, and he's also very, very driven. And as a result of this, he can get a little bit kind of worked up, really, when he's out in the real world, kind of dealing with all the various stimulations that are in the environment, especially other dogs. So again, it's not an uncommon situation. Many, many people suffer with their dogs being a little bit nervous and apprehensive out in the, in kind of the very overstimulating environment, and may suffer around dogs. So we've been doing a variety of little kind of the foundation work, really kind of helping us build a really clear way to communicate with our dog and try to give them skills and techniques so that the dog has more choice. And therefore, we can look to reinforce different choices, and ideally choices that we would like the dog to make when it does encounter those obviously different stimulus in the environment. Now, often with most dogs, they actually prefer, and ironically enough, kind of quite similar to the second dog I'm going to talk about, actually prefer kind of to have freedom of movement. So you'll hear lots of people say, do you know what, my dog is usually kind of brilliant off lead, but really struggles on lead. And that's often down to kind of that choice and what my dog feels like they can do, how much empowerment they've got to create and reduce space at their own free will. And therefore, obviously, when they're attached to a shortened lead up to me or up to their handler, obviously an element of that choice is taken away. And naturally, we start communicating a lot of things through the lead, through our own tension, our own body language, in our own emotional states, let alone the dogs. So working with dogs kind of on the floor with lots of space, lots of freedom of movement is usually one of the earliest things I will look to do. But this little terrier, interestingly enough, being on the floor and moving, interestingly, is a big kind of stimulation trigger for him. So we kind of likened him a little bit to kind of a wind-up toy. So, you know, you'd kind of, those old-school toys, you would wind them up and you'd pop them on the floor and they'd whiz around and do whatever they do. And this little lad is quite similar. When he is on the floor, outside in the real world, he has to do stuff, he has to move, and he wants to. My personal opinion is, I think a lot of it's quite impulsive. I don't think he's really thinking about what he's doing, because when we watch the videos, when we watch his movements, he's kind of just moving a little bit aimlessly. He's not sniffing, he's not targeting any points in an environment, he's not even doing kind of excited zoomies or anything like that. It's kind of the human equivalent of pacing is what he appears to be doing. So during this one-to-one session, we had a discussion about how he feels kind of being held and kind of being in the arms of mum and dad. And again, this isn't something I would usually look to do, because again, back to what I mentioned before, if you are being held in someone's arms, your choices are obviously massively limited, because I can't go anywhere. I'm kind of up off the floor. I'm being suspended in midair. And many dogs actually feel quite uncomfortable with that. However, this little lad, it was his safe space. So we were doing some exercises around Hugo, my German Shepherd, and when the little Jack Russell Terrier had basically freedom of movement and was on the floor, his threshold was minimal. He really struggled to focus. He just had to do that pacing type activity. And when we moved to picking him up and offering him some reassurance, offering him some comfort, his entire demeanor changed. Now, folks, please don't take this as a just start picking your dogs up. That's not what this is about. But what I want to try and help emphasize is that when you're working with whatever it is, hopefully with a fantastic reinforcement-based professional, that changing tact and changing approach is honestly all part and parcel of it. There is a real bad analogy, I suppose, on the dog training podcast, but there's more than one way to skin a cat, as the old saying kind of goes. So it's about looking and how do we work with our dog to kind of give them the right feelings, the right security, so that they feel like they can make the right choices whilst also feeling safe. And that was the big change for this little lad. The minute he was in mum's arms, his entire body relaxed. He was no longer stiff. He was no longer kind of feeling that need to move. His ears dropped down. His eyes just went a lot more kind of calm and relaxed. And she was able to walk around with him in much, much closer proximity to me and Hugo, the stooge dog, with her little boy happily watching, happily listening, refocusing back on mum, happily being reinforced for that, and was so much more calm and relaxed. And then about halfway through the session, we looked to see, right, so let's see what happens when we pop him back on the floor. And interestingly, reverted straight away, went back to that pacing activity, went really, really kind of anxious, stiff, tense body language, lots of movement, didn't want to focus, didn't really want to listen. He just felt like he had to, just had to move without any kind of direction or any purpose. And then we popped him back up into mum's arms, and again, instant change, felt much more comfortable, much more relaxed, really responsive. There was no kind of readjustment, there was no wiggling, there was no kind of rabbit kicking with his back legs or anything like that. He was just so relaxed and calm in mum's arms, and genuinely calm. You know, again, one of the things that we look for is sometimes the appearance of our dogs doing nothing is seen as a good thing, where professionally that can actually be quite a bad thing, because dogs can put themselves in a state where they don't do anything, and to us humans it looks like, in inverted commas, good behavior, when actually that dog is really struggling and is just kind of given up, is probably a similar kind of human analogy. You know, they've just kind of accepted the situation, they don't like it, they don't want to be in it, but they've realized there might not be anything they can do about it, and therefore they do nothing, which to us looks good. However, that wasn't the case for this little boy. He was in mum's arms, his demeanor had changed, his body language had changed, his responsiveness, his appetite, everything about him just got much calmer, much more relaxed. So as a professional, that's a bit of a challenge for me, because naturally people want to go for walks and outings with their dog, and the idea and the concept of carrying their dog around, even though he's only a little lad, but you know, after good old time, and even for the fittest of people, you know it is a weight to carry as such, that can be a challenge. So the second half of the session was very much looking about, okay, so now we found something that works, where this little Jack Russell Terrier feels safe, he knows he's got choices, he doesn't have to kind of go to his default reactions or his default coping mechanisms. Now the training is about how do we start to transition that into basically a wider skill set. So how do we do it closer to the ground, on the ground, all these types of things is where we then take our training. And it would have been so easy not to have ever have done that, because that isn't what we usually would train, it isn't what we would usually do. And when you see things about kind of systems and processes and, you know, quite defined ways to do things, there will always be a dog that comes along that challenges those kind of norms. And having that ability to really assess and think and kind of work with that dog to find out what gives them that feeling of safety and then what enables them to have that choice is a big part of what a lot of dog training professionals will be doing. So even though it might not feel a logical approach, it can often be a huge step in the right direction. So doing that in a session, it was honestly, it was really strange for me, because it's not a piece of advice, it's not an approach, it's not a tactic or a protocol or whatever label you want to throw on it. It isn't something I would usually look to do with a client and their dog, tackling the issues that we're working on together. However, for that little man, it's exactly what he needed. And giving our dogs, the learner, what they need frees up everything else. The minute our dogs do feel safe, feel like they've actually got a bit of a say in the matter and have got some choice, that's how we can really cement real deep, proper, comfortable learning, really good teamwork. And let's be honest, if you're ever in a sticky situation and you know someone's got your back and is going to help you out, that just creates more bond, more trust. And with our dogs, that's exactly what we want to do. So for this little lad and this particular kind of protocol, in terms of, without boring you with the detail of how mum and dad will handle that situation in the future, what will trigger him to come up into their arms, and how they will use that as an opportunity to help little Jack Russell Terrier kind of process the environment and work through it together, was a real, real win for me. Honestly, it really was, because we've given them, that team, a different way to handle a situation that works for everybody. It gives mum and dad the ability to navigate through an environment. It gives Pooch the ability to feel safe and to have those choices about what he would like to do. We've talked about the what to do if situations, and now we've got a training plan that I'm very confident will actually progress that dog forward even more than we already were, which for me is huge. So, giving you a little insight into the next lad, who is a Bedlington Terrier Whippet Cross. Quite similar in terms of his outlook to the world. However, there was a really interesting dynamic with this family, as how Pooch behaves with mum versus dad was really different. So absolute hat tip to mum, very passionate, very dedicated, very knowledgeable around the world of dogs, dog training, has done absolutely everything for her little boy to try and kind of help him overcome kind of the challenges in the world. However, it's mum who seems to have the encounters, or the negative encounters, more often than dad. And we were talking about kind of why this is, what it could be, different ways to approach it, and very, very similar to the last dog we were talking about, good old safety and choice. And we did something really, really interesting. So dad actually walks the dog on a completely different lead setup to mum. A lead setup, usually I'm not a huge fan of, if I'm honest. However, dad's experience has been what we would probably class as better. You know, the dog feels, or doesn't appear to give any kind of similar reactions to the environment when it's feeling a little bit uneasy. Whereas mum feels like she has more of those interactions when out and about. So we literally did a test. So good old Hugo came out for me. I had dad pop Pooch up with his normal walking setup, and I asked mum to film it, and off dad went with Pooch, and we had wonderful experience. The dog barely did anything, didn't really react, was happy to move around the environment around my other dog, and was, for all intents and purposes, relatively relaxed and seemed to be quite comfortable and confident. We then changed to a different lead setup, and then we asked mum to take over. Apologies, no, we didn't. We stayed with the dad's lead setup and asked mum to take over. Again, we had almost identical experience. So how the dog kind of behaved and responded in the environment with dad was the same as with mum when using the lead setup that dad uses. So then we went to a different lead setup, which was a long line, had mum handling again, and the dog again was absolutely fantastic, came incredibly close to my Hugo, was quite happy to break away, listened to mum, really responsive, very relaxed, and quite happy just to mooch around the environment like any other dog would, which was fantastic. We then brought out the original lead, and interestingly, when we clipped this lead onto the dog, it was like flicking a light switch. Now, this lead in question, it's a wonderful lead. It's a type of lead I would actively encourage many people to go out and buy. It's got fantastic length to it. It's versatile. It's great material. It's lightweight. And for a kind of Bedlington Whippet kind of dog, it was absolutely perfect. But instantly, this dog kind of flipped and changed. And this is what was really interesting. So again, we got this all on video, and instantly the dog did not want to come within about, it was about 25, 30 metres of Hugo, after literally being about 2 metres from Hugo. So to see quite a dramatic shift was quite startling, actually, especially when he'd been in the area previously quite happily, now actively avoided the area, didn't want to come anywhere near it, really unsure, literally kind of put the anchors on, did not want to move, effectively didn't want to listen to mum either, got very, very, what we'd probably describe as quite defensive. He really did not feel comfortable at all with proceeding, kind of walking around the paddock in the vicinity of Hugo when he was attached to this lead. And that was fascinating for me to watch, because again, it came to those two factors. For whatever reason, in this dog's mind, when he's attached to that lead, his safety is compromised and his choice is compromised. And as such, his behaviour changes instantly, absolutely instantly. And there's probably lots of reasons for it, and as humans, we want to kind of seek out the root cause. We always want to know why. But for me, I'm kind of looking forward. I'm looking at that dog, looking at the partnership and going, right, we've now found effectively a trigger for this dog. When we are using this particular lead, which is kind of his standard walking lead, his behavior and his demeanor and everything completely changes. We now know that that is a contributing factor to how he feels. It certainly, from the video footage we got, definitely changes his opinion on safety. It, as a result, ultimately is going to limit his choices, and therefore his behavior, his tolerance has completely changed. So a small, simple change of equipment for this dog could be a massive, massive step forward. Now, of course, the handling of the lead and everything else is all part and parcel of that discussion with the client. However, for us, it's a very insightful thing when you can see it from the outside in, which is why getting this filmed was such a big thing for me, because when you are stood with your dog and you're trying to overcome a problem, deal with a challenge, develop your training, whatever it is you're doing, your perspective is incredibly, incredibly unique, because you're the one effectively attached to Pooch. And so getting video footage, getting outside kind of eyes looking in on the situation is massively, massively valuable. And that was where, for me, kind of these past two kind of clients have been really eye-opening, because I'm, as you do as a professional, you reflect on the cases, you're looking at them, you're analysing them, and you're trying to ultimately learn from them. If I'm honest, I'm trying to look at them and understand what was different, why did we have to go down that route, why was that such a dramatic switch or change, etc. And the two things that both of these cases have in common is safety and choice. The minute that we can influence and improve how safe our dog feels, the minute we can then help them understand that they've got more choices, and then we can build our training around reinforcing the kind of mutually beneficial choices for our dogs. And without that, you're just gonna fight a losing battle. You're just gonna struggle. You know, you might persevere with technique, after program, after protocol, whatever it is, but if you do not have those two things, you are just instantly kind of tying a hand behind your metaphorical back and limiting your kind of training. And I think more importantly for me is, I always ask the question about that kind of bond and that relationship. And going back to the last client there, the bond and relationship between mum and that dog is absolutely out of this world. But for mum, I can imagine it's incredibly frustrating when, despite this amazing bond, despite the teamwork, despite the time, effort and energy and all the work that they've done together, behaviourally the dog is giving different behaviour responses when out with dad versus when out with mum. And the ones with dad are, from the family's perspective, the preferred ones. They're the more relaxed, the more casual, the more kind of, if I hit the word normal, but hopefully you get the inference, they were kind of just a little bit what they were hoping for when they brought a dog into their life. So to have that shift in dynamic between the two of them was, it, honestly, it's hard work, guys. It's quite frustrating, it's quite heartbreaking, and I've absolutely been there with my own rescue dogs. You know, you feel like you're doing everything right and it's still not quite working, and you can't understand why, and you know, you don't know what else to do. And when you realize that there's those small little tweaks available to you that you might have just completely discounted because you weren't, probably didn't even know there were a thing, it can make such a massive difference. So I'm really, really keen to see how these two dogs progress. Obviously, now that we've kind of tweaked our approaches and we've changed tact and we've given these dogs new options when it comes to safety and choice, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how they progress. So I suppose my takeaway for this particular episode, guys, is exactly that. Kind of, as always, guys, if you're struggling with anything, please do seek the help of an assessed, certified professional that uses reinforcement-based methods to help you kind of progress your journey, because that outside perspective by a trained professional can help you massively. But it's very hard to analyze yourself. So I'd always say to everyone, you know, really try and think about that safety, really try and think about the choice. They're the two big kind of components for me that make a massive difference. However, you kind of don't know what you don't know. So if you're in a situation and you know, you can almost just feel a little bit lost. You don't really know where to look, what to do next. You tried this, tried the other, nothing seems to be working. So if you've got analytical people who are friends, family members, or whether you really want to challenge yourself and try and look at that situation, they are the two components I would massively ask you to explore. And remember, don't explore them in the context of where you're having the issue, because that's not always beneficial. So going right back to the first dog, the Jack Russell Terrier, the conversation was about, where does that dog feel comfortable? What does it like to do? This is kind of, you know, just in life, in general, wherever they are, and kind of being on mum's lap and getting cuddles is a big, safe, reinforcing area for the dog. So fabulous, that's what led us to trying that kind of out and about as part of our training exercises. It isn't something we would just kind of do kind of off the cuff, because if the dog doesn't find that comfortable, getting the person to pick the dog up, that's not going to be beneficial. If anything, it's probably going to make the situation worse. So whenever you're kind of analysing anything, particularly where you're trying to overcome a challenge, what I would look for is to kind of find, where's your dog's happy place? Where do they seem to demonstrate all the natural, relaxed, chilled out behaviours? And what are the components and what are the factors in that situation that contribute to your dog feeling that way? Because if that's how your dog feels, two huge components are the safety that your dog feels and therefore the choices that they can make, and them ultimately being the nice choices because your dog's relaxed and calm and chilled out. So do it. Have a think. Look at those scenarios. Look at those things that you're troubled with. And if you're working with a professional, ask them. You know, if you're finding that you're hitting a bit of a brick wall with something, talk to them about kind of, how do I look to change the situation? Because just because that's the way that we always do it from a training perspective doesn't always mean it's right, especially when we're working with dogs, because they're all individuals. But as always, folks, keep it reinforcement based, keep it fun, keep it happy, keep it relaxed, keep it calm. I know that's a bit of an oxymoron against the fun, but you know what I mean. We're looking to build those real quality safe spaces for our dogs so that we can help them learn all the fantastic skills we want them to learn to help them have a happy, long, fruitful, loving life. Okay, folks, that's it for episode 43 on safety and choice. A much, much shorter one this time round. But, you know, if you want a longer episode, go back and listen to Hannah's episode. It was awesome. I still can't get over it. And I might eventually one day shut up about it. But until next time, folks, take it easy and I will speak to you soon. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening to the Woofing Possum podcast. As always, if you do want to get in touch, you can find us on social media. I'm at Great Paws NE, which is Great Paws NE for Northeast, on both Facebook and Instagram. You can also contact me via my website, which is greatpaws.co.uk. And you can also consume some free online courses at greatpawsgang.co.uk. Excellent. Thank you very much, folks, and we will see you soon for our next episode.